We're back and joined now on the telephone. This is a no waste time situation. I am pretty excited. I don't get that excited about many things. I'm very excited to have this gentleman on the phone. Charles Barkley joins us. Charles, thank you so much for being on the show today.
No problem, my brothers. How y'all doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I had the chance. I met you in London, and I got to say, when I saw you on the street, your reputation as a guy who's approachable preceded you, and you did not disappoint. You're one of the most approachable people I've ever seen, especially someone with as much notoriety and as famous here. You're one of those guys who looks like you pride yourself on talking to your fans and being nice to your fans.
Well, you know what? I think guys should. I mean, most of the people you meet, most of the people you really meet are really, really cool. Now, every now and then you'll meet a guy who's had too much to drink who just wants to be a jerk. But I always tell people, most of the people I meet are really cool, and I take it as a compliment.
It's a big thrill when people come up to me and say, hey, man, I listened to your show and I really appreciate it. Or listen, I didn't like what you said and I disagree. It's still a thrill. Tell me about your broadcasting career. You've become such a big personality in not just the basketball world, but outside of the basketball world. Before we talk about your career, did you ever think when you played basketball that you would become such a media celebrity when you retired?
I had no idea, and I got to thank my mentor, Dick Ebersol, for that, because he's the first person mentioned it to me, and obviously I'm enjoying it. I'm getting paid to watch basketball, but I think the number one thing I try to do is, and it was really cool for the players to vote me their favorite announcer last year. They know that I'm always be honest. They know that I'm always be fair. They know that I don't have a hidden agenda. You know, a lot of reporters have hidden agendas. You know, they have guys they like and guys they dislike. And that's one of the reasons I can't stand a lot of guys. I think these guys know I'm going to be fair with them and I'm going to be honest with them. And even when they disagree with me, they respect it.
Well, look, the bottom line is you're not saying anything that you don't believe. And I think you're not saying anything that, you know, maybe somebody didn't say about you at some point, you know, and maybe because you're a player, you have a lot more credibility. Let's talk about your career. It's really interesting the way you got into a high level of basketball. You grew up in Alabama and played high school there. And tell me a story about how you, when you were in high school, you weren't that tall, and then you sprouted later on in your high school career, and you played against a guy who was being recruited, and then all of a sudden they said, whoa, who's this guy?
Well, I think for me, you know, one of the reasons I was able to handle the ball so well, I was a 5'10 backup point guard until I was a senior in high school, and I grew from 5'10 to 6'5 in 1 year, so that really helped me with my ball handling ability. But I was still a 6'5 center, and people weren't sure if I could play against bigger players. And I said, you know, I like my chances against anybody, and I played against the best big man in the country, a guy named Bobby Lee Hurt. He was 6'10", and I played very well. They were ranked number one 4A. We were ranked number one 3A. And I think I scored 30 and 20 against him. And then I started getting – still none of the major colleges recruited me, to be honest with you. But I was going to stay close to home anyway. And it worked out great for me going to Auburn. It is a really cool, wonderful place. I really am looking forward to the football game this weekend. But we really, it's a great place to go to school.
And you enjoyed a career where you were drafted fifth overall in 1984. And you were drafted to the Philadelphia 76ers. And you came into Philadelphia, and early on in your career, you know, Charles Barkley was a guy who was joining a team that was veteran-laden team with Julius Erving and Moses Malone and Maurice Cheeks and some great, great basketball players. Tell me about earlier on in your career, that experience. You had some rough spots that you had to work through.
Well, I think, number one, I had to get in shape. That was the main thing. Once I got in shape, the rest is history. Because, you know, when I was in college, I played about 300 pounds. And I played in the NBA about 250, 255, so I just had to really just get in shape. But that was a really cool thing about having all the veteran guys in Philly when I got to Philly. They taught me not just about basketball. Moses got me in shape. They also taught me about life, about saving my money and things like that, not the need to waste all your money on cars and jewelry and crap like that. So it really helped me in the long run. You know, 70% of professional athletes go broke, 70%, because they got too many freeloads in their family and friends, and they waste all their money on cars and jewelry and things like that. So the really cool thing about getting with Dr. J and Moses and Maurice Cheeks and Andrew Tony and those guys, they talked to me about saving my money. Because the money you make, I mean, obviously at this point the TV thing that wasn't even on the radar. So the money you make when you're playing, it has to last you the rest of your life. So that was the best thing about coming to a veteran-related team, just teaching you about life.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Charles Barkley, and Charles, let's talk a little bit about early on in your career with the 76ers. You know, you had an incident in your career early on, and it was in March 1991, and you spit at a fan, you ended up hitting somebody else, and you had to pay a $10,000 fine, but you apologized, and you provided tickets to future games. But can you tell me a little bit about that experience, and do you think that was a big turning point? Like, how did you feel at that time, and how did it affect the rest of your career?
Well, it was actually probably one of the better things that ever happened to me, because obviously it was stupid to do. But the thing is, you know, I was playing with a chip on my shoulder, and I tell all these young guys, whether it's Mike Tyson, I told him, and Ron Artest, and you know, guys like that, I said, if you play with a chip on your shoulder, or you live on the edge like that, it's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when you're gonna fall off the cliff. So for me, I had to like step back. I had spent my whole life playing, like, because everybody said I was too small and things like that. I was like, dude, you gotta let all that stuff go. You're good enough to play in the NBA. You're gonna be a great player. You got a ton of talent. You don't have to be angry at the world who told you you were too short in high school, too short in college, and too short to play in the NBA. So for me, I was like, okay, just step back and just let your talent. You don't have to be angry at anybody. So that was absolutely one of the cooler things. I mean, obviously it was stupid, but it really helped me. Like, hey, just play. You don't have to prove anything to these people. You're good enough.
So let's talk about one of your famous quotes, and it's a quote that I actually agreed with at the time when you said it, and I actually kind of still agree with it today. And the quote was that I'm not a role model, right? It turned into a Nike commercial. Tell me a little bit about that quote and how you feel about that quote today. Do you still think that athletes are not role models?
Sure, athletes, you know, they aren't role models. When I went to Nike with the commercial, first of all, I made that commercial for young black kids, because young black kids are getting screwed by the system. There's a couple of us going to make it to the NBA, but what sports are, you got a bunch of people making billions and billions of dollars on guys who they're not educating, and they got all these young black kids playing sports and making all this money, and these kids aren't graduating, and these kids aren't going to be Michael Jordan or Charles Barkley or Karl Malone, and I want them to make sure they really need to get their education. First of all, we don't know any. The system is what it is. I think the money's gotten so big now, you can't change the system. But what you really got is a bunch of people who are making tons and tons of money. You know, people look at less than 1% that go on to play any type of pro sport. But these guys are all out there killing themselves, making all this money for these people, and they're not graduating. So the objective of my commercial was like bring awareness, like, hey, man, teachers, firemen, policemen, doctor, people in the military, those people are the real people you need to be trying to pattern yourself after, because you're going to have to get a real job and be a valuable member of society. And I was really, that's probably the coolest thing I've done in my career, that commercial, to be honest with you.
Well, it's, you know, resonates to this day without question. And for people who've watched Charles Barkley for being, you know, a young player who had, you know, an incident earlier in his career and was a guy, look, you played with a lot of passion. You played with a chip on your shoulder, but it was maybe a different kind of chip, because your intensity never got dialed down in terms of wanting to win. And you know, there's a reason why you rank second in NBA history in defensive rebounds in a quarter, and a guy who, you know, up on the boards, you were the most feared guy in the league. league. So tell me a little bit about playing with great players and the specific instance I'm talking about and want to hear about, and I'm sure people want to hear about, is the Dream Team, a team that was put together for the Olympics and a team that was treated like absolute rock stars when they arrived for the Olympics. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was probably the coolest thing because the Olympics are the coolest sporting event in the world. I've been fortunate to play in two Olympics, and I tell people, there ain't nothing I've ever done in my life has been as cool as the Olympics. I mean, it's just an awesome, awesome thing to be a part of. And obviously, we got together on the first Dream Team. It was a big deal. It was an honor to play with all those guys. We had a wonderful time. But I think the main thing, our biggest legacy was we made basketball an international game. Because before we went overseas, it wasn't an international game. It's really cool for us to, you know, when we talk to Tony Parker, Steve Nash, Dirk Nowitzki, Manu Ginobili, and all those guys, they were talking about that was the first time they really got into basketball. But it was obviously, you know, they had a really cool dream team this summer. You know, they had a good team. Everybody wants to compare them to us. I like our chances. I think our team was just too big for them. You know, David Robinson, Patrick Ewing would have had their way down low. Because as great as LeBron James is, and Kobe and Kevin Durant, I think our physical size would have just beat them to a pulp in the long run.
What was cooler for you, winning a gold medal in Barcelona in Spain or winning a gold medal on American soil in 1996 in Atlanta?
Well, that's a great question because I think it was different. It was cooler in the States, as much hoopah as it was on the 92 team. You know, you couldn't take your family and friends all the way to Barcelona. But actually, in fairness, being from Birmingham, basically, having all my family and friends come over to Atlanta was probably the cooler event because, like I said, I'm not taking all them freeloaders all the way over to Barcelona. But, like, Birmingham is only a two-hour drive from Atlanta. So to have all my family and friends and being able to just get to Atlanta, as great as 92 was, it was really cool to be able to have all my family and friends in Atlanta for 96.
So tell me, as far as the NBA this year, let's move forward. And you've been on the broadcast on TNT since like the year 2000, I think. It's been a long time. It's a very entertaining show. Shaq's on the show with you, and you know you watch. If you've ever seen Charles on television in here in Canada, you guys look like you are having the time of your life on that show.
We are having the time of our life. We're just talking about basketball. We're not talking about anything important. I mean, I always tell people, man, sports aren't important in the big picture. I mean, it's just something that's fun to do. It's an honor and a pleasure to play sports. But, like, I've been saying it for years. I mean, like, listen, teachers, firemen, police, and doctors, and people in the service, they're like real legitimate people, hard workers. I mean, we play in basketball. So I don't take it that serious. Never. And, listen, we're getting paid to watch basketball. We shouldn't take it that serious. So we hope that people have fun watching our show. I hope they do.
Let's talk before we wrap up. We have a couple more minutes here, and thanks again for coming on. It's been great to hear your stories and comments. But let's talk a little bit about the current NBA. Who's the favorite this year in your mind? I mean, the Lakers picking up Howard and Steve Nash. What do you make of that? What are your thoughts on the Lakers? And you got an incredibly athletic team like Oklahoma City, who's, you know, got a year of experience, and you got to lose to win. And you've got the Miami Heat, who, you know, you got to give LeBron props, right?
Well, he won. I don't believe in that lose to win thing.
Okay.
I mean, Oklahoma City is not going to win because they don't have any low post scoring. Until they get some low post scoring, they're not going to win. The Lakers are going to be interesting. I mean, obviously, you know, but you got to ask yourself, Steve is 40 years old, so you don't know how much he's got left in the tank, and you're not sure about Dwight Howard's back. Now, if both of those guys play well, I would make the Lakers the favorite. But like I say, Steve is 40 years old, and Dwight Howard's got a bad back. If they're healthy, they're going to be the favorite. But Miami Heat, hey, listen, they got the only guy, whatever, this guy, LeBron James, is scary. This guy's flat out unbelievable. I said I would never compare anybody to Michael Jordan, but this guy's the closest I've ever seen, and he's spectacular. And they got Ray Allen and Rashard Lewis. The Celtics, to me, are going to be a sleeper team. I like what the Celtics have done. If they can get everybody healthy, they're going to be in there. And the 76ers going out getting Andrew Bynum. I think that really made them a much better team. They're going to be tough. The sleeper team is probably the Brooklyn Nets. I really like what they did with Lopez and Chris Humphries. I like them going out getting Joe Johnson, and obviously they got Deron Williams. But right now, on paper, like I say, if Steve got anything left in the tank, and also if Dwight's back doesn't be good. I mean, when you have a back problem, man, it's just crazy how that works. But the Lakers probably are the favorite on paper. And probably, like I say, the Heat got their hands full this year with the Boston Celtics.
Charles, it's been a great pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for doing it. We greatly appreciate it, man.
No problem, my brother. Y'all take care of yourself.
We'll talk to you soon. That's Charles Barkley joining us on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.